Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting baby boomer women with professional peers. Advice you can use to be more confident in your financial future. Inspiration to take control of your personal finances. With Lynn S. Evans, Certified Financial Planner.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the host of Power of the Purse podcast. There was a time in my life not too long ago when I believed three things about money. Women are not supposed to talk about or be included in any conversations about money. Two, women don't have the natural ability to understand anything about money. And three, men know best how to manage money. And those truths I made up about money guided me for years until I realized money was not a foreign language or some other obscure academic exercise. And it was something I could not only understand, but teach to other women. Too many times I've heard stories from women who ought to know better but didn't, until they were forced to, because of divorce, widowhood, job loss, or the approach of retirement. This podcast will add another chapter to an ongoing, informative conversation about financial topics women should be more knowledgeable about. My mission is to help women reduce their financial illiteracy and develop a healthy relationship with money. With that in mind, my guest today is Gabrielle Hartley. Gabrielle is an attorney, coach, mediator, speaker, and author. She is known for a unique, non-toxic approach to divorce that she developed over two decades in practice. Gabrielle keeps 99% of her cases out of the courtroom and at the negotiating table as she effectively supports her clients to create a healthy, uplifted post-divorce life for them. Gabrielle served as court attorney for Judge Jeffrey Sunshine in New York City Matrimonial Court and is a member of the Massachusetts Council on Family Mediation. She currently resides in Northampton, Massachusetts with her husband and three sons. Welcome, Gabrielle.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here with you.
Good. I can't wait to talk about your book because I know this is a very exciting time as we are recording this. It is going to be published and available this week. So congratulations. That's really wonderful.
Thank you so much.
And tell me the name of the book.
So the book, which is being published by Harper Wave, is called Better Apart, The Radically Positive Way to Separate. And we just got an endorsement from Gwyneth Paltrow. She said that it contains potent, accessible tools for your family and your future. So that was pretty exciting for us.
Wow, that's a wonderful endorsement.
Thank you.
You're traveling in some very impressive circles, ma'am. Okay, so let's get to this. What is this unique program that you have for handling divorces?
So Better Apart is the first book to combine the life-changing and healing wisdom of meditation and yoga together with the practical advice aimed at helping anyone going through the painful and seemingly intractable realities of divorce. When I first came up with the idea of creating this project, I reached out to a very old dear friend, Elena Brower, who is a world-renowned yoga and meditation expert and practitioner. And I looped her in, and she has given some really wonderful contributions where we incorporate meditations, mantras, and mindfulness throughout the whole program. What Better Apart does is it structures the process of uncoupling through the lens of patience, respect, peace, clarity, and forgiveness. And I call these the five essential elements of an elegant divorce.
Well, I love the term, an elegant divorce.
Thank you.
That is really interesting. I love it because it seems to be something that would be a contradiction of terms.
Exactly. That's what wakes our brains up. We hear something that sounds a little discordant, like jumbo shrimp.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So where did you come up with that name?
How did you come up with it? I really brainstormed a lot. When I grew up, my parents divorced when I was 9 and my brother was 6. And while the facts and circumstances of the divorce were certainly messy, they did their very best not to get us sort of swept into the chaos. And I didn't realize what a great job they did until I worked for the judge and I saw case after case, hundreds and hundreds of people bringing their entire family through what turned into trial-ready, messy unraveling of families. And I just started to realize how elegantly my parents handled their dissolution. And I really wanted to boil down what they did into a digestible format that other people could hopefully activate, if not for both parties, at least for the individual. Because of course, we can't control the way our exes behave. We can't rewrite the history of the betrayal or the mental, you know, moderate mental issue, even if it's just ADHD or something like that, which can make marriage very difficult. But what we can do is start shifting our response and the narrative that we deliver ourselves so that we can use our divorce actually as a launch pad forward. So we can recreate our life and recalibrate our systems so the rest of our life can feel and be better.
Just that in concept is just so not the way people perceive divorce, nor I could say from my own experience with clients who've been through divorces, I have never seen one that turns out really well. I mean, yeah, maybe the money part of it got handled to her liking, but the animosity, the anger, the indifference, it's one or the other. And the constant wrangling back and forth about the kids and using them as pawns. And I'm sure you've seen that, you know that that happens. I have never, ever experienced anyone going through a divorce where any of what you're talking about was even present.
Well,
never mind that they adhered to it.
That is unfortunate.
Do you do
I don't know. I really strongly believe that divorce is truly a reconfiguring of a family. It should not be, and I hesitate to say the word should, but it really shouldn't be the splintering. I have a knee-jerk reaction when people talk about children ping-ponging between families. I look at it as a flow between households. We need to remember our children have only one childhood. And by putting our children first, we put ourselves first. And by holding on to anger, we're not only hurting our children, but we're actually eating away at ourselves. We think we're punishing the person who hurt us, but really, you know, there's that expression, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. And that's oh my God, it's the best, right? It's good and it's true. And I'm really sorry to hear that you have mostly experienced these very negative divorces. That's not actually been my experience. Although I will say when I was in the court system, I did see a lot of cases boil in a direction that they really did not need to go. But I think we each have the power to start shifting the dynamic. And remember, even if things are really hard when you're going through them, over time, we can create new mental habits where we rewrite our story. It doesn't mean we're lying to ourselves. It just means we're reframing so that the story of our history is more positive.
Can you give me an example of what that would look like? How can you reframe a situation?
So, you know, let's say you have a partner who lied to you, either they cheated or they spent money, and you feel so wronged by them, like they did it to hurt you, right? But then when you take a bigger a look from the balcony, okay, and you look out and you see the whole forest, you probably are going to start noticing that that person actually lies to a lot of people, lies to themselves, doesn't have the same depth of friendship that you might have, repeats the same kind of behavior with new relationships. They're not living in peace. They don't have the ability to have contentedness because the things that you feel that are happening to you are not really about you. They're just happening. And they are more an indication of weakness or trauma or something else going on with your partner. And even if you say, well, you know, to heck with my partner, I don't care. I don't have compassion for them. Why should I forgive them? It's not about forgiving them. It's about having compassion for yourself. And it's about feeling good because as far as I know, like we only have today, right? So why not enjoy our as many of our days as we can, as much as we can? That doesn't mean that you're going to have, you know, no pain and no times where you're feeling regretful for choices you made or decisions you did not make. But it does mean that if we start looking forward in a positive, specific, powerful mindset, we can start to redirect our thoughts and our actions and change our life. So truly, we do become better apart.
Okay, let me give you an example. I'm just going to play the devil's advocate here.
Yeah, please, please.
Okay, so we got this all handled, and I'm feeling pretty good. I've forgiven myself for some of the negativity that I may have brought into this marriage or whatever it was. But then all of a sudden, out of the blue, my ex comes up with something that just reactivates that anger, and my reaction is immediate. It's the same reaction I had when I found out that he was cheating on me, or it's the same reaction I had when I found out that he's been tapping the credit cards to the nth degree, and I'm trying to pay them down, and he's jacking them up. So how do I handle that in the moment when it's happening? Because the anger is real, it's there, and I'm seeing it happening again and again. And maybe it is that, you know, I'm trying to get past it and say that I believe that I have a good handle on this, and yet when these little things happen, it just completely reactivates me. How do I get that to be a permanent state of mind?
Okay, so these are so many questions, and these are such great questions. So I will do my best to answer them one by one.
Okay.
And if I skip something, feel free to come back at me. It's no problem. So first thing is we use the word react a lot. And I talk a lot about responding rather than reacting. Now, how do we do this? I'm probably one of the least patient humans on this earth. So I really, really, really resonate. The idea of reactivity resonates deeply with me. And so I'm going to give you two simple little tricks which we can do to calm ourselves in the heat of the moment. And the moment can come so quickly and you don't even know how it got there. But so two quick little tricks that you can do to shift from reaction to responsiveness are these. Number one, you're going to take three nice deep breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth through pursed lips. So you're gonna go, I'm gonna do it right now. Maybe you can do it with me for a minute if you can close your eyes.
Okay.
We're gonna go in. And hold it at the top and then go out.
Okay.
And you're gonna take another breath. We're gonna do it in. And we're taking deep breaths and out through your nose. And then you're gonna take one more deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth, nice and slowly. And you're going to keep your eyes closed. And then you're going to let your eyes open just slowly. And you're going to feel, you should feel, that your internal system is actually cooled down just even a touch. Now, you're not activated right now because we're just having a conversation. So you might actually feel like, oh, all right, well, that's great now. But I have done this with clients over and over and over again. Obviously, if you can step out of the situation, you know, hang up the phone and say, I'll call you back in 10 minutes, that's the best. But sometimes you're hit with something right in the moment. You can just sit there and take nice long breaths in and out your mouth just for 30 seconds. It really, really can start to clear your head. And when your mind is clear, your thoughts are better and your response is going to be better. And less reactive. It's kind of like, did you ever read Marie Kondo's book, The Japanese Art of Tidying Up?
Yes.
She talks about, okay, so she talks about cleaning out your closets. I talk a lot about cleaning out your mind, okay?
Oh, that's good.
Because when your emotions are clear, then you have space to think. And then you don't react. Because let's say you know, okay, you know, this guy is an SOB and he keeps on doing the same stuff over and over, but I keep going back. It's like you kept going back to your mother or your father for some sort of praise that you're just never going to get, but yet you can't stop the cycle of going back. Okay, so I said I was going to give you two little tricks. So I gave you the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you're going to do, if you know that you are a reactive person, I would encourage you to just take a little mantra, you know, write it on your mirror in the bathroom, say to yourself throughout the day while you're taking a walk or doing some exercises or just sitting at your desk. And I like the mantra, I'm radiantly calm.
Oh, that's
I'm
nice.
Radiantly calm. Yeah, I say that to myself sometimes during a yoga practice for an entire hour and a half. I breathe in, I'm radiantly calm. I breathe out, I am radiantly calm. And you know, when you do it so often that it becomes a habit, you don't have to even think about it when you're in the heat of the moment. So by making something a regular practice, it becomes integrated in who you are. And then it's not like, okay, it's time to say I'm radiantly calm. You're just feeding yourself that message all the time. So it might feel a little goofy to start with, but it actually works. You know, if that all fails, you can go to George Costanza's parents and scream, serenity now! But I think deep breathing and giving yourself a mantra is probably going to be a little bit more effective in the heat of the moment.
Okay, I get that. Now, your statistic, 99% of your cases never make it to jury trials or whatever. It's handled. Is that because you're working with both sides of the divorce?
You know, it's really not. It's because, first of all, I mean, I think there's a set of self-selection. People know I'm very settlement-oriented. I have a very strong knowledge of the law, of where I work in Massachusetts, when I work as the lawyer, I have a very strong set of understanding of what the law is and what the possible outcomes are in court. And if I have a reasonable attorney on the other side, they know that I'm going to negotiate very hard for my client and be reasonable to their client so that I don't leave a trail of toxicity in the wake. When the two lawyers are out of the case, we don't want to have disturbed clients, you know, whose children are all messed up because we've wreaked so much habit into their personal lives. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I'm dealing with a client right now who is in the thick of that. And I just feel like it is so toxic. It is scary.
And that's why I started my consulting practice, was for people who are really embroiled and the two lawyers don't get along. I mean, my book, I give lots of tips about how to engage lawyers so that they can work well together. But sometimes you have no control. Sometimes it's just, it is so beyond you. Your lawyer might be totally reasonable, but your ex and their lawyer might be totally unreasonable. And all you can do is control your responsiveness. That's like it. And there's lots of tips that this book is really just full of pathways to open up, ways for you to uplift yourself regardless of your circumstance during and throughout the divorce. Because even when the divorce dust has settled, especially if your client has kids, they're still gonna have to deal with this person, and it can be really not fun. You have to build boundaries. There's, you know, a lot of work.
Tell us the name of the book again.
Sure. Better Apart, The Radically Positive Way to Separate.
Okay, that's really good. Now, let me split the time here and talk to you about something that I've done with most all of my guests, and that is I'd like to talk to you about your experience with money. Now, you mentioned that you were from a divorced family, but even at that, you still have the same. You've made up some things about money. So let me start by asking you, what was your family life like when you were growing up?
So that's an interesting question. And I'm going to choose the snapshot in time because, of course, it was different at different times. But
sure.
The snapshot was on the moment when my parents announced that they were getting divorced. You know, my mother told me, never depend on a man for your money. Okay? Ever. And I was 9. And I really took it seriously. And in my 20s, I sort of resented that she said that because I saw all of these other young women who were following their boyfriends around, you know, not worrying so much about their own career. And now from where I sit, I'm happy that I really love what I do. And I've created something that's not, you know, just about the money. I've been doing it for such a long time. I really, it's like a labor of love at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There was definitely a sense of scarcity around money, if that's sort of the answer. I'm not exactly sure, you know, what you're asking, but there was definitely, it always felt like there was the term a cash flow problem.
Yeah.
I heard that phrase a lot when I was growing up, and it's taken into my adult years to realize that money and resources are abundant, and you have to believe that and allow it to flow in and out and through and around you. And somehow it at least, you know, knock on wood, it's worked out in my life. And I think that it's not magic. I think, you know, I'm always putting one foot in front of the other and planning, but I've always tried to live in such a way that I'm not living for a resume or for a dollar.
Yeah.
I'm trying to live for things that feed my soul.
What would you say your first memory was of money?
That's a great question. I'm going to say second grade. My teacher had everyone stand up and say how much allowance they got.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's like a crazy story. Well, because I might be misremembering this, but I kind of feel like my parents gave me a nickel a week, which sounds like a ridiculously low amount of money, even for the 1970s.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of kids got a quarter and I got a nickel, but maybe everybody else got 50 cents. I remember I got a lot less than the other kids in my class and I was really mad.
Well, yeah. That's so humiliating. Why would anybody do that? That's crazy.
Yeah, and then in third grade, a teacher made a graph of how much we all weighed. That wasn't that fun for me either.
Wow.
But that's another.
You need to get a different set of teachers. I think that would have been better for you.
Well, they had other good parts, but anyway.
Well, what lessons about money did you learn while growing up? Now, you mentioned the one about your mother. That's great sage advice. What else did you learn?
I always learned to work and to save. My I was an entrepreneur since I was a very young child. I was selling ribbon barrettes in the 80s to neighbors and pads with stamps of thumbprints on them to people throughout my grandparents' apartment buildings in Riverdale.
I
was always really careful. I was just always careful. I made money, I saved money, and I gave a lot of money. I always loved giving presents. I always gave, you know, my friends presents, and yeah.
That's cool.
I also learned my dad had in our kitchen, there was inside the cabinet, there was a star chart. And if, I don't know if I should share this story, but there was a stars, and if you did 10 chores, you would get a quarter. And my brother and my father's girlfriend's daughter were working really hard for their 10 stars. And I had no stars. And I was maybe about 10. And my father said, Gabrielle, you have no stars. And I said, Dad, you have a tray of quarter on your dressers.
Okay. All righty then.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. But that's, you know,
well,
those are
lessons you learned about money. They're valid.
Right.
And what would you say has been the most threatening to your financial security?
I mean, today, the government furlough, because I'm married to a federal employee.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't really feel threatened.
Well, that's good. That doesn't have to be some answer.
I feel like activated.
Good.
Like I always have been. Mm-hmm.
Well, this whole thing with your book is very exciting. And that's enough to keep you active.
I guess the one thing that causes me, and I think probably your listeners can probably relate to, is paying for children to go to college. That's definitely sounds incredibly scary to me.
Yes.
Because I'm not young and I have three young children.
Yep.
And God knows what it's going to cost.
Well, you'll just have to sell tons and tons of books.
Well, I mean, I think something's going to have to change because we want to have an educated population. And the way things are now, it's not very accessible to so many people, like truly not accessible.
You're correct. Yes. So what events have happened in your life that you would describe as defining moments?
Oh, gee. I'm not sure how to answer that. Defining moments.
It's whatever it is to you.
Obviously, although I always said my parents' divorce didn't affect me, I think the moment my mother said that she and my father were having a trial separation,
yeah,
that was a defining moment.
Sure
was. That
was
probably the most defining moment in my entire life.
Okay.
Yeah, and also around money, I have this other memory, which was defining. My grandparents had a house, and I guess they had paid off the mortgage, and we all went out for dinner, and they, quote unquote, burned the mortgage papers. I don't really know if they burned anything, but but I remember that. It made a big impact on my mind.
Yeah, it obviously did. So do you ever see yourself being retired?
I'm not sure what we mean by retired. I really love what I do. So I don't see myself just, you know, eating bonbons and shopping full time.
Yeah.
I do hope to not have any work that I don't enjoy at some point. I hope to be doing full time just what I love and to be financially independent in that regard.
Yes.
But I don't see myself not working at all.
Okay. And who is or was the most influential woman in your life? And what advice did she give you? Would you give the same advice to younger women today?
Well, I already said my mother, and I would give that same advice that I said already, which was, you know, never to depend on a man or anybody really to support you financially. I would definitely share that advice. And my paternal grandmother, my grandma Sally, she always said, just remember, you are not better than anybody and nobody is better than you.
Ooh, that's good. That's good.
And I think that's something we all need to remember.
Yes. And what was grandma's name?
Sally. Grandma Sally.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's really great. That's very succinct.
Yeah,
I like that.
She was a first grade teacher for 37 years, and she graduated NYU with 2 master's degrees in 1934. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's one hell of a role model.
I was very proud of her. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That was your mom's mother or your father's?
That's my father's mother. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't want to stop, but I think we need to stop here somewhere. So thanks to my guest, Gabrielle Hartley. And Gabrielle, tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so you can contact me for mediation or for divorce coaching for yourself, mediation for both of you, through my online platform, GabrielleHartley.com. That's GabrielleHartley.com. And you can contact me if you have questions at all, anything related to your divorce before it, during it, or through it. And my book, Better Apart, The Radically Positive Way to Separate, is available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, and at your local bookstore. You can also find me on social media, on Instagram at GabrielleHartley1, as well as LinkedIn.
Perfect. I love it.
Thank you so much.
So to all of you in my Power of the Purse community, I hope today's podcast was helpful in enriching your understanding of important financial matters. If you'd like to spend 15 minutes on a call with me and ask me questions about your personal finances, please go to my website, womenofsubstancellc.com. Select the contact tab and find a time that works for you. And thanks again, Gabrielle, for sharing your time and your knowledge. And until the next time, thanks for listening. And remember, money is not the enemy. Your ignorance of it is. Goodbye.
This has been Power of the Purse with Lynn S. Evans, Certified Financial Planner. For more information and a free copy of The 7 Myths Our Mothers Taught Us About Money, visit online at womenofsubstancellc.com. That's womenofsubstancellc.com. Be sure to subscribe for more inspiring stories and information to help you take charge of your financial future. Thanks for listening.